This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. No, I'm not going to quit even if Barry resigns. And who knows, by the end of the pod, one of us might be the transport secretary. But we'll carry on with what we're here for until we hear otherwise. The Women's Euros begin in front of a record crowd at Old Trafford. Beth Mead's lovely dink, just enough for England to see off Austria. Not the greatest performance, perhaps not the greatest game, but a win and a clean sheet in your opening game is fine. It's all about peaking at the right time in tournament football. We'll look back on that and ahead to the weekend's games. Also, Raheem Sterling agrees personal terms with Chelsea. Will only the Frankie de Jong end up at Manchester United after all? We'll spend a bit more time on Liverpool and see if Barry knows the transfers that happened yesterday. There's lots of goals in Sierra Leone, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hi, Max.
Fresh from being at England-Austria, Ceylon, Andy Hickman, hello.
Morning.
And fresh from commentating for BBC One, Robin Cowan. Hello, Robin.
I think fresh is not the right word, but yes, hello.
Listen, it's what, the day after two nights in Dublin. For me, it is also not fresh. Andy says Boris is in trouble, isn't he, Barry? Look, we'll get to that. It's not what we're here for. You were commentating then, Robin. How was it for you, that game last night?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was immense. I don't think I've heard a noise like that at a women's game in this country, at least. I know it was. We've obviously had that at the Camp Nou earlier in the season with the Barcelona Champions League games, but it was honestly deafening, spine tingling when they came out at Old Trafford. It was just fantastic. It was real, like, glad I was there moment, especially for those who've been covering the women's game when basically no one watched it. So it felt very special.
Did it feel like kind of, I don't know, not the end of a journey, but did it have that kind of, I mean, I saw Ceylon, you tweeted as well that I've already teared up three times. We're over 7 hours from kickoff. Ceylon, did it feel like that yesterday as a kind of seminal moment?
Definitely. And I think I tweeted last night, I get the desire to stay away from the conversation about this is such a momentous occasion and this means so much more and look at the growth and haven't we done well and all that kind of chat. But it is really hard to stay away from that when you're feeling it so viscerally in that moment. And you looked around last night and I described it as it's like your whole life you've been waiting for kind of a door to unlock and trying to unlock that door. And then the door suddenly unlocks, but everyone's allowed through for the party. And everyone did come through for the party. It was such an amazing atmosphere, like 68,000 people, young, old, men, women, like just appreciating and loving the moment and the game and the players. And I think that was, yes, there were a few wonderful Mexican waves, which, you know, our young people absolutely love. And there were torches, but it was such a different, it did feel like a new dawn. I think my friend Jenny Simmons writes a magazine called Manon, and she did like an obituary of the women's game yesterday, which was like, the women's game as we know it died at 8 p.m. on Wednesday the 6th of July. Like, this is the new dawn. And that might sound quite sensationalist, but there is definitely that sentiment that it feels like a new moment that we can all just, yeah, sit back, enjoy, and I guess push to the next level.
Yeah, Johnny Liu writing that this ground hadn't seen this much smoke since the Super League protests was a good line. Did you feel that, Barry, like sitting at home watching on your television? Did it feel different to you?
Yeah, I suppose you have to break it down. There was the occasion and there was the game, and certainly it did seem something special. I do get slightly concerned sometimes, and Ceylon alluded to it there, that sometimes people covering the women's game can lose the run of themselves a bit and go into self-congratulatory mode when there is a massive crowd at a game, and then you go and see a Women's Super League game on TV and it's kind of tumbleweed a few weeks later. To get 70,000 to Old Trafford for this curtain raiser for this tournament certainly bodes well for the rest of the tournament. And, you know, they've sold over 500,000 tickets. All the England games have sold out. So it is going to be quite the party, as long as England do their bit.
And they just about did their bit, I thought, last night, Robin.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been said before that actually, yeah, the performance wasn't the most convincing. But I think that was understandable. You know, it was pretty intense. A lot of expectation on this team. And I think just in terms of the result was the most important thing yesterday. And also, I do think there were flashes of really good play. They were quite wasteful. You know, I think that was the thing that Serena Wiegmann would have been disappointed with. She always wants them to be ruthless. I mean, even when they beat Latvia 20-0, she was saying they should have scored more. So it's, yeah, in my opinion, I think it's just, I'd like to see the performance level go up the next game. It's going to have to, because Norway are excellent and a class above Austria. But 3 points, clean sheet, I don't really see anything wrong with that. I think there are a lot of mitigating circumstances with the performance. I don't want to bring it up too much, but the weather wasn't great. It was really windy and rainy, which obviously, you know, kind of expects going into Manchester, but it wasn't easy. And I imagine just trying to get into the head of the players walking out into the atmosphere. I mean, I don't know about you, when I get really nervous, I get quite tired, you know, you kind of shut down a bit. So I can imagine, you know, there were misplaced passes, and I just feel like that would have affected them. I think getting through this with 3 points, 1-0 win is no problem for me at all.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there was a recognisable England that we've seen from the warm-up games. There was an aggressive, moving through the phases really, really well. I think Ciara Walsh played phenomenally again. The way that she can turn out of a really tight space and release one of the deadly front three so easily, just with a cutting pass or a ball over the top. And we saw that. And then it was kind of the last phase that sort of let us down. We crossed, I don't know how many crosses, I'd love to see the stats, but the crossing was, yeah, unreal. Just firing balls into the box from Hemp and Mead. But none of them were quite right. And I think that's where, and also we were playing against one of the best goalkeepers in the WSL. So it was going to take a lot to score a lot past her anyway. And it felt like we were going for a very direct crossing sort of tactic. But yeah, I'm really happy with it. I do agree that I think the occasion would have made it hard to settle. And almost there was this anticipation of what we've seen from the warm-up games, that we come out stronger in the second half. And that didn't really happen either. So the second half felt quite flat. And thank God for Mary Earps, because I was sat there in the last 5 minutes thinking, if we concede now, this is going to feel like a massive loss. And we didn't. And I think that was just a real testament to kind of the strength across the pitch, and that it doesn't really feel like there's a weak area in this squad. And when you've got that squad depth as well, it does bode really well. And I think Norway on Monday night will be, hopefully we can relax a little bit more, more familiar size stadium for some of these players, less pressure in terms of the opening game. Such a boost from last night. I can imagine the mood in camp this morning is phenomenal. I think Beth Mead came out, didn't she, last night in the presser saying, I don't know what Serena Wiegmann said, because we all just got too carried away with Sweet Caroline on the pitch. So that will be so big.
A nice little detail as well that I didn't notice at the time, but I saw on Twitter, Beth Mead and Manuela Zinsberger, the goalkeeper, are teammates. And afterwards, Zinsberger just said to Beth Mead, "Fuck you," which I loved, as they hugged afterwards.
They had a little cuddle, didn't they?
Yeah.
Hey, Barry, it was a brilliant finish, wasn't it?
It was a brilliant finish. The pass was excellent. The chest down was great. She knew exactly what she wanted to do. But I do think the goalkeeper was badly at fault and could have done better. She sort of ran out and stopped. If she'd kept going, I don't think Beth Mead would have been able to get the shot off. So, yeah, an excellent finish, but it was made easier for her. I'm not saying it was easy, but it was made easier for her by poor goalkeeping, in my opinion.
So on some people sort of writing this morning, there's this sort of redemption for Beth Mead, or sort of getting everyone back for not being part of that GB squad. Clearly that in the Olympics, clearly that's a big... That must have been a massive deal for her when she wasn't selected.
Definitely. If you look at that front three and what Hemp and Mead can both offer in those spaces and put into a tall centre forward, it is, yeah, really impressive. And I think we look great when Chloe Kelly comes on, definitely. But I think having Mead on the right, they swapped, actually. They swapped in the first 15, I think, and allowing Hemp and Mead to cut in a bit more. But yeah, she's incredible. There were big rounds of Beth Mead's on fire in the club last night at about 2 a.m. So she's definitely a fan favourite.
I'd like to hear more about the in the club at 2 a.m. Salam. So what? Who was in the? Were the players there, or was this just the fat? What was the after party like?
The players weren't there.
I did think at one point, I was like, imagine if you were one of the Lionesses and you walked in now and you saw this community of people.
Like the England cricket team just wandering in. Yeah.
Well, Chelsea women went to Box Park after the FA Cup final, didn't they? Apparently they had to, like, they were all just like seen paying for their own drinks and food after they'd won the FA Cup in Wembley Box Park, just with the fans. So we were kind of hoping, obviously the Lionesses were not there. That is not COVID safe. It was a wonderful night. It was organised by Flo Lloyd Hughes and Becky Taylor Gill, and it was Studs v Huns as a night in the Northern Quarter. There were many familiar faces there. I'm not going on record to say who from maybe the podcast lineup was in that room on the dance floor.
Wearing double denim.
Yeah. I just didn't know Johnny Lou could dance, but I'd love to see it one day. What do England need to do better, Robin, than against Norway?
I think just finish their chances. I think, as I said, I think this one's out the way. The sort of anticipation's over now. Play with a bit more clarity. I do think, Austria are very astute defensively. Norway's main threat, their main strength is their forward line. So they're going to have to be good. I mean, we should have a big mention for Millie Bright. I mean, the ball was kind of like almost like a magnet to her head. She won every single header. She was immense. She's going to have to do that again because Norway have got, obviously, Ada Hegerberg, who's back fit and firing. But they've also got these two wide players in Graham Hansen and Guru Reiten who can provide absolute quality delivery from the flanks. So, I mean, England, I think, on the whole, were fairly good defensively. They're going to have to be really good against Norway. And yeah, just want to see more of the same and just finishing off those chances that they created. I don't think the Norwegian goalkeeper is as good as Manuela Zinsberger. So hopefully we'll see more attacking threat from England.
And actually, Austria, a good team, aren't they? And actually, had I not heard the preview pod that you did on the Guardian Women's Football Weekly, Robin, I'd have perhaps expected, because Austria started that game really well, I thought, and like created some openings without perhaps having really brilliant chances. But there is a danger, I guess, it's in England that we see with the men's team a lot, that we all just get carried away. Once you sing Sweet Caroline three times, you think, oh, we're gonna win this. And like Ceylon, there are lots of good teams in this tournament. And it's in no way a given that England will get to the final. Look, we're one of the favourites, but that doesn't really mean anything, right?
It doesn't mean anything. It means something for an England fan at an international tournament to have the sense of hope and optimism and get drunk on the feeling that this is it and we're gonna win something. And that is part of the beauty of supporting England in a football tournament. But yeah, definitely, I think it's quite good that we had... I think Austria was a tough first game to come out against. We knew defensively they were strong. We knew they had a brilliant goalkeeper. We knew that they'd line up in sort of a low block and try and probably know how to play against this England team. And they did hold on. And they came out in the second half quite strong. Norway, it's good that we've had a game to warm up to go up against Norway. I'm hoping there's, as I said, a bit more of a relaxed feel to it and that these players can go out there, enjoy it and play the relentless aggressive football that we've seen in the warm-up games. So, but yeah, it is absolutely by no means England's shoe into this final.
But the win in the first game is everything, gives them the chance to settle any nerves. If they had messed it up or lost, then they'd still be nervous against Norway and it could have been a disaster. So even if the performance last night wasn't brilliant, I think they need to hold the ball better, score more of their chances. The win is all important.
Owen says, I'm curious if Barry's, antipathy towards the England men's team extends to the women too. My terror at the prospect of a tournament win for the men is totally all-consuming, but I think I'd be pretty chuffed for the women if they did it. It's an Irish compatriot of yours.
Yeah, I'd be the same. Would have no problem with England winning this tournament. In fact, I hope they do win it. But it's the men's football team and the men's rugby team. I just want to fail. I actively support the cricket team. I'm happy to support the women's football team.
Where does that come from, though? What motivates the support for the women? Is it the shared struggle at this point?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, that is a very good question and one I would have to think about. I suppose I've lived here for a very long time, so I can be magnanimous. I could live here for 5 million years and I would not be able to bring myself to wish the England men's football team well.
But it's an interesting question, Son, and it probably reflects on me as well. And maybe it's just because I didn't grow up with women's football. That last night I didn't have the agonizing like pain, nerves, fear that I have for the men's team going into a major tournament. I don't know if it's a terrible like subconscious admission that, you know, I'm just at heart a proper football man. But like, you know, the build up to a men's major tournament for me is still different.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. And I think I'm trying to reflect on my own experiences now, thinking how I felt last night pre-game compared to how I felt maybe before the men's Euros kicked off last summer. And I think there's so many similarities, but I think the women's game naturally, because of my own lived experience, feels, I don't know, there's a closer proximity to maybe the elite level that feels like we're all in this kind of together. I feel like when I support England men, I'm one of, there's a sweeping national solidarity. It's the only time I ever feel vaguely, you know, nationalist. Last night I was there, like, had my Three Lions on my chest, like patting my chest and singing. And I was like, this is the only time I ever feel like this. And I definitely feel more patriotic when for the Lionesses, but maybe less nerves, less dread than I do when I support the men.
But I suppose what you want, Robin, in a, you know, in a perfectly equal world is everyone to feel the same nerves, anticipation, excitement, whatever they feel for one tournament to feel for the other. And I wonder if that for, you know, young boys now who are 6, 7, 8 and like watching this tournament, like they'll watch the men's tournaments and they'll just happen together, it may change over time.
Yeah, no, I think you raise a really interesting point there, because I think it's because I cover the women's game, it feels like, even though I don't know them, but I know these players and you want them to do well, and that's how we get the sort of terrible ball of anxiety when we hear that. And then obviously watching the Premier League, we know the players and we feel like, you know, we hear them in the build-up and all that, and it's kind of like, again, you have this kind of connection with them. Whereas I think that connection, as you say, hopefully those who are watching the tournament today will start to feel that connection with the players, and then with tournaments to come, that horrible dread and horrible feelings will come watching them in a tournament and just desperately hoping them to do well. But yeah, it's still, I hate to use the phrase, but it's still growing. The visibility still isn't as big as, you know, obviously the Premier League, so accessible. So that connection will come, I'm sure.
It's funny to wish that dread on anyone more, even more. That, you know, it's a terrible feeling. Most importantly, Robin, though, the tiny car was there, and what a wonderful, wonderful to see the tiny car.
Oh, again. What a surprise. I wasn't expecting that. It was genuine joy in my voice when I saw that. And you know what? It was another first for me yesterday. My co-commentator, Rachel Brown-Finnis, I don't know if this is letting too much behind the curtain, but she turned up in an England shirt to commentate. So that's a first for me. But thankfully she wasn't in vision. Yeah, that was lovely, a lovely touch. But yeah, the car. I wonder if that Twitter account's been active again since that.
The Twitter accounts. Do you know what? It's one of those things where it was like, this is hilariously shit the first time you saw one. And then you were like, okay, I'm going to get behind the car because it's so ridiculous. And now it's a bit knowing. But I wonder if, when does the tiny car jump the shark, right? When is it no longer cool to like the tiny car? Yeah.
So Robin, in terms of your own sort of personal career highlights, where does last night rank?
Oh, it's, yeah, definitely top. It's incredible to commentate on any game for the BBC, but to commentate on an England game, their first tournament at home in front of a crowd like that, that was, yeah, the best. And yeah, I mean, it feels like a big responsibility. Hopefully it was all right to watch.
It also, I've seen quite a few journalists, commentators reflecting that they can't find the words, which is quite a difficult position to be in as a journalist or commentator yes. over the months. So we might not have much coverage of this tournament. So it might just be all of us being speechless every game, just crying and tweeting like, that we're crying.
That. Robin, saying, you just wept. You just yeah. wept for 2 hours. Like, going, this is such a great.
Like X Factor judges yeah, exactly. houses, yeah.
You get your backstory. Your great grandmother always wanted yeah. you to commentate, and then you just dive in a swimming pool and hug Louis Walsh. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll look ahead to the weekend's games and talk a few of the transfers in the men's game. Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May the 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Sidford said, will my hangover after last night's Dublin show be gone by the time you record this? I really hope so. Gary says, how was that pint in Mulligan's on Poolbeg Street on a scale of 1 to leaving a guitar in the back of a taxi? Yes. If someone has found a guitar just in the back of a taxi around Dublin, just look after it. You know, I don't need it. It was the cheapest possible guitar. You know, imagine the postage would be more expensive than just getting a guitar equally that cheap. But it is Barry.
I think the listeners need to know, Max, that like you didn't leave it in the boot of
no,
the
no.
You were sitting beside your guitar in the back seat yeah. of a taxi
yeah.
and got out and forgot to bring it yeah. with you.
And then I was in the hotel room sort of looking around for things and I just thought, oh, I've left. And I thought, well, where's the guitar? It's like, it's not a big hotel room. There was no
guitar. Were you just playing to yourself? Were you just thinking, oh, I'll have a little Wonderwall?
Yeah, I just thought, oh, that's what I like to do. I like to play No Woman, No Cry. It's like just before I go to sleep every night. Just pick it on the acoustics.
Do you think Elton John's ever got out of a taxi and gone home and gone, oh, bollocks, I left my grand piano in the back seat of the taxi.
You know, it's a different level of gig, I suspect. But anyway, hopefully we'll find a guitar for the shows in Hackney. Come on, this is our last chance to plug it. They're really good. We've got a few tickets left. Friday and Saturday in Hackney. If you live anywhere near, come, please. Because, you know, we do all these podcasts for you. I mean, we get paid for it, I guess. So, you know, so start getting angry with the listeners. But look, come if you've got nothing to do on Friday or Saturday night. Troy Townsend, Jonathan Wilson.
Is there an after party?
It's a good question. We did invite the whole of the Dublin gigs to the pub and they all came. And both nights there was just one barman, just like on a Monday night going, what on earth's happened here? Anyway, he got very angry about a chicken being thrown around. I can't, you know, Mark Langdon was there. What are we meant to say? Troy Townsend, Jonathan Wilson, Nicky Bandini on Friday, Ellis James, Barney Ronay, Sidlow on Saturday. Saturday's show is being live streamed, so wherever you are on earth, you can listen to it. You have no excuses. You can catch up for the following week as well. Watch it whenever you like. And next Wednesday in Glasgow, Philippe Auclair, Jonathan Wilson, join us as well. Merchandise is available online and occasionally on tour if we remember to bring it. A scarf, a t-shirt, it's lots of David Squires inspired stuff, and he is brilliant. Right then, this was the big news before we talk about Northern Ireland and playing their first game in their first tournament. Alexis Putellas ruled out for Spain is such a massive blow, Ceylon, isn't it?
Yeah, huge, and I feel really bad, so it's sort of a public apology. When I first saw the news, it broke on an Instagram page saying it was a knee sprain, and I reposted it to my story and put, it's on, lads. And then it was announced that it was an ACL tear, and I feel really terrible. So I apologise for anyone who saw that, and you should never wish injury on a player. That is heartbreaking. She is in the form of her life and makes Spain so exciting to watch. So to not have her in a tournament, to do it on the eve of a tournament, to know that you're going to be struggling and in a physical and a mental battle for 6, 8, 9 months, yeah, is heartbreaking. So Yeah, I apologise for that post. I didn't know the scale of the injury in my defence at that point.
I'm sure you'd be forgiven. It's probably not forefront of her mind, Salam. I don't, you know.
Really?
She's pinned your story on her.
absolutely right, for her rehab. We wish her all the best. It's such a shame one of the best players, Robin, is out of the tournament, right? It's just a real shame for the whole tournament.
Well, in that manner, yeah. I mean, I'm mostly gutted for her. It just must be so heartbreaking. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual team, I mean, she was central to their plans. So I just wonder how they're going to kind of rejig things. I think they were possibly overhyped anyway with her. So I really think they might be up against it. They're in a very tough group. So yeah, I mean, a huge loss. And also a wider point here, it's just the one of so many ACL injuries for women. So many. And there has been research gone into it, but it just doesn't seem like either people aren't listening or they're just not, like, I don't know, doing anything to prevent these injuries. But we see them in the WSL, don't we, Solana? Like numerous. It's usually like 4 or 5 a season. And it's just the most devastating injury for a footballer, isn't it? It's worse than kind of breaking something.
Is it to do with physique or physiology?
Our hips, this is one of the reasons, please jump in if I'm completely wrong, but because our hips widen, the angle can obviously compared to your knee. There's going to be physios listening to this being like, she's talking absolute bollocks, but this is what I've always been told, is because our hips are slightly wider, it means we're more vulnerable to the tear and the planting, and the way that obviously your knee plants in that moment and tears your ACL.
So presumably in an elite level, you know, coaches and physios were saying, you know, what's the only thing you can do? Once again, amateur hour of physios is like build up the strength around the knee, right? That's all you can do. And you know, presumably that's what we'll find. Look, as the tournament goes on, we'll get someone on to talk about it, because it's actually quite a really interesting subject. I think, look, Northern Ireland's in their first tournament. I think, as you sort of mentioned on the women's pod, Robin, like getting there is the achievement for Northern Ireland, right? If they do anything against Norway tonight, it'll be extraordinary.
Oh, it really would be. I mean, I really don't want to sound patronising, but this team mainly are part-time, and they went full-time. The ones who were only part-time, who play in the domestic league in Northern Ireland, they set up a kind of full-time camp from January until now. So it's really, it's extraordinary achievement that they're there, and they're again, any sort of positive, a goal would be amazing, because I know all their games have been played in Southampton, which is great because all their fans can go and camp there and watch every single game. So I'm sure it'll be a really great atmosphere. But realistically, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to pick up any points. It's just because of where they are as a nation in terms of women's football. But, you know, I'm hoping they get a moment at least to celebrate.
Is there a possibility they could be on the end of one of those cricket scores you see sometimes in women's football?
I really hope not, because I'm hoping this is the tournament where we don't see the sort of 7-8-9-0s. And you know what? They're quite a cohesive unit, but if they concede one, they might get emotional.
I was going to say the same thing. I just don't know how they're going to deal with all of those difficult emotions that come with a tournament.
Yeah, that was Kenny Shields' comments after the England game. But I think it's more, I think in terms of conceding one, then two, then three, and four, it's just because their fitness won't be as good as the other teams. Because again, I think twice when they played England, they've managed to hold out for about 60 minutes, and then the floodgates open. So I think it's just about, can they kind of use that adrenaline to just keep going a little bit more? And Barry, I just really hope not. I hope not for the tournament's sake as well as theirs.
We had quite an interesting tweet, and I've lost it, but it sort of said, you know, why are you starting the Guardian Women's Football Weekly and then competing with it on the same day? I think it's okay to have, you know, more coverage, and we're not starting it and then just trying to kill it by being on at the same time. But look, they're out today and they do a whole pod on women's football. We are obviously going to cover this because it's the most important football that's happening right now, but we will also talk about other things. They'll be out more regularly than us through the summer as well. So they're out today, they're out on Sunday. We're going to be back Tuesday is the next time we're going to do a pod. So I'm going to move to the men's game.
There's also it should be pointed out that on the women's or Guardian Women's Football Weekly, there won't be 50% of the panel who have not much of a clue what they're talking about.
Speak for yourself there, Barry. but yes, you make a very good point. So let's go to the men's game. And actually, I want to talk firstly about the Champions League final. So I think Barry and I spoke to you on the radio. You were in the fan part, weren't you, in Paris, but saw the journalist Daniel Austin tweeting yesterday, and he's been covering the story a lot, that Paris's chief of police, Didier Lallement, is set to be removed from his job, in part due to his handling of what happened at the Stade de France. This would be a significant victory for Liverpool supporters who fought to show the truth and for the safety of anyone in Paris. And as someone who was there, Ceylon, even though if you weren't at the ground, that must mean a lot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to see someone who's done a bad job get removed from their job. It's quite an unfamiliar thing in this country. It is, but it also doesn't take away the sort of trauma that a lot of people experienced that night. We spoke the day after. There was still a bit of a haze and you were still learning a lot of new things at that point. I've got a friend who was there and talked about what happened after the game, as well as everything that happened before the game. Mm-hmm. There's small victories in having someone removed from an institution that caused a lot of pain, but it doesn't make up for the pain that a lot of people experienced that night. And that's people's overriding more memory of the Champions League final. It was so good that the parade happened the next day for a lot of people who, yeah, had relatives, maybe not people who were there because of getting back, but lots of people's relatives could go out and celebrate that moment with the team, and that could be their lasting memory of the season rather than, yeah, horrendously traumatic night at the hands of institutions that are supposed to protect you and completely led you into danger at all points of the evening.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of those things, isn't it, where it happens, we all go, this is terrible. Fortunately, the truth comes out, and the truth comes out very quickly, right, as opposed to, you know, previous situations. But then when the news cycle moves on, we sort of forget about it, but there will be Liverpool fans who were there, especially ones who, you know, have memories of Hillsborough, right? Even if they don't, who are feeling really sort of probably nervous coming up to the season, right, because of what happened
there. Definitely. It's an embodied experience that's very hard to shake. And like you said, draws on a history and a collective history of something incredibly painful and traumatic. So we'll see. I think, yeah, obviously we're fortunate in this country that stadium security, apart from the Euros final, is in a good place. But yeah, we'll see when we start going to Europe and how that sort of manifests amongst fans, I'd say.
How much, back to Liverpool, the team and playing, how much... how often do you sort of refresh the gossip pages, the transfer pages, Ceylon? Are you quite relaxed about the summer?
Quite relaxed. I feel like we've done good business already. And I can't really think of anything else other than the Women's Euros at the moment and the Tory party, falling apart. There's too much news at the minute. I cannot believe the Tories decided to do this when they're doing it, when we've got a Women's Euros to concentrate on. So my refreshing sort of... yeah, the Guardian live text on what's going on at Downing Street and then any women's football news at the moment. So Liverpool is definitely on the back burner for me.
Apparently Boris is resigning. That's the breaking news. Is that true, Joel? That was literally just the news coming in from producer Joel. You probably will have heard it before you hear that. If this is where you get your breaking news, fair enough.
But, what else should we tell them if this is where they get their breaking news?
Apparently, the letter is written by Boris Johnson. I mean, I know half our audience aren't in the UK, probably don't care quite as much. But for most people in the UK, I can't speak for everyone. For me, I will say that is good news. But maybe he's written two letters. He's done that before. Anyway, back to the football. Raheem Sterling's agreed personal terms with Chelsea. Robin, are you surprised? I'm sort of surprised that Raheem Sterling has left City, actually, and I'm interested to see how he does at Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm really interested. It's an it's a really interesting transfer from both sets of parties, actually. Manchester City selling to, well, I guess they don't, interestingly, I guess it's kind of a bit of a power play. They clearly don't see them as a rival, or they just don't rate Raheem Sterling as much. I think from Sterling's point of view, it probably is time to move on and go somewhere else. He's won everything with them apart from the Champions League, and he maybe wants to be less of one of the kind of rotating front three and maybe be a bit more of a sort of main figure. I hope he does well. I'm a big fan of his, especially from an England perspective. But yeah, it's just an interesting one from a City point of view. Got rid of him, got rid of Jesus. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on at Chelsea. Because, I mean, again, their sort of forward line is sporadic in terms of actually firing. So yeah.
But he kind of is that. I mean, look, Daniel Charles, the Chelsea writer and broadcaster said, 109 league goals in 320 appearances. Since 17-18, only Jamie Vardy, Harry Kane and Mo Salah have more goals. So I think surely there are some other centre-forwards who've scored more, but maybe not. Like, and like Wilson was on the other day saying, like, he's not really a clutch player, to use that term, saying, you know, in those real pressure moments. But perhaps that's doing him a disservice. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's got a ridiculous scoring rate. But then when you think of him, you feel like he does miss quite a few chances. So yeah,
but him and Timo Werner together is great fun, isn't it?
There's going to be a lot like of pained expressions on the Chelsea crowd.
Barcelona have claimed that Frankie de Jong is not for sale, even though Manchester United have got an agreement in place to sign him. Wonder how this window is really going along for Manchester United, eh, Baz?
I'm not even sure he'd be that much of an asset to Manchester United, to be honest, but it is every window we do get one protracted on off, big high profile transfer, and this is this one. Erik ten Hag clearly wants him. I read somewhere this morning he's furious that Barcelona have decided he's not for sale, but it's another one of those wait and see things, isn't it? You know, Barcelona could be just trying to weasel more money out of United. We just don't know.
You enjoying watching what's happening at Old Trafford? Has it got to a pity stage yet, Ceylon?
Sorry, I just got the Guardian push that says Boris Johnson's to resign. Sorry to bring us back there.
No, that's okay. I just think once I mentioned that, I thought nobody on the panel is really going to be focused on talking about meaningless transfers, are they? You know, we could just talk about politics for 10 minutes. No, my question, Ceylon, was, you know, do you look at what's happening at Old Trafford and, you know, another somewhere it doesn't seem to be working out perfectly, with joy, or do you sort of, have you started to pity? Would you like a competitive Manchester United again?
It's a really tough question. Oh, would I like a competitive Manchester United? I've also got, you know, I'm thinking about last night, and I went into the toilets, Old Trafford, the women's toilets, where, by the way, there was a massive queue, and we need to really redesign some old stadiums so women can go to them. Only time you'll ever queue for the toilet at a professional football matches if you're a women's game.
Welcome to our world, Ceylon.
Oh, it must be so hard, Barry.
I'm just wondering, when you went into the packed women's toilets at Old Trafford, were all the cubicles full of people smoking and doing cocaine, or were they actually attending to their ablutions?
Yeah, but predominantly children. So yeah, I hope not that. But you never walk alone was inscribed on one of the doors when you went for a wee. So and it wasn't me. Which was a nice moment. So do I want Manchester United to be competitive again? No, because of their ownership. And I think if you're going to ruin a football club like that financially and put profit and greed above the success and happiness of so many fans locally, globally, then no, you don't deserve to do well until the ownership changes.
Okay. Good answer. Barry, some transfers, what have happened? Joe Aribo to Southampton, your reaction?
I think it's a good transfer for both clubs. He's gone from Rangers. They bought him for 300 grand from Charlton. He's been good for them. Very versatile midfielder. I think he used to play as a deep line midfielder under Steven Gerrard, and then Giovanni Van Bronckhorst played him in a more advanced role, I think, due to an injury crisis, and he was good there. He can play wide. Not quite sure. It's a bit like Gabriel Jesus to Arsenal. What are Southampton getting? Are they going to use him as a deep lying midfielder? Play him advanced. They already have James Ward-Prowse, Oriol Romeu, and Ibrahimo Diallo. So I think it's a good transfer. And Southampton do have previous in the field of buying a player from an old firm club and then selling him on to Liverpool for tens of millions of pounds. So he'll probably be lining up for Liverpool in two seasons' time.
He's a good player. Tyler Adams to Leeds.
Yeah, he's a young American defensive midfielder. I suppose I don't think he's like for like, but he is basically a replacement for Calvin Phillips. They're big boots to fill at Leeds. So he'll need to hit the ground running. He's played under Jesse Marsh at New York Red Bulls and at RB Leipzig. So Marsh is obviously a big fan of his. But I would not like to be going to Leeds to replace Calvin Phillips because that is a tall order.
That is. Pogba and Di Maria have both gone to Juventus, which, I mean, the Pogba story is an interesting story, isn't it, Robin? And so it never really worked. And we know he's a really good footballer, but he didn't really deliver often enough.
No, it's a real shame because seeing some of the, you know, his range of passing, he's so elegant, strong. When he's playing well, he's an absolute joy to watch. But it just, I can't really remember that many times for Manchester United, at least, where we saw that. So hope he gets back to it. It just didn't work out. I mean, obviously he was playing under numerous managers, which probably didn't help either. So yeah, just hope he gets back to sort of playing with freedom and being happy. Although I don't think we need another Pogmentary or whatever it was. I think we can leave that story there.
Will Graham Souness follow suit by transferring to BT Sport so he can continue to just tear into him week in, week out?
In his back garden going, get your haircut.
Well, you just think if he just had one haircut for his whole Man United career, it could have been so different, couldn't it? Anyway, that'll do for part two. We'll do any other business in part three. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Uncle Leo says, would you resign from the pod if Baz submitted a no confidence letter? Richard, will the Premier League still be able to run if there's a civil war? I mean, one step at a time, Rich. And Guy says, can Mike Reid be brought out of retirement to send Boris Johnson off? I think he meant Mike Dean, but I love the idea of bringing Frank from EastEnders back to life to walk in there and go, you're out. Anyway.
Wasn't Mike Reid the Brexity DJ pop picker?
Oh yes, there's that Mike Reid too. Yes, yeah, Saturday from Saturday Superstore to Hard Brexit. Who knew that was such an easy path to make? Wonder what Sarah Green and Philip Schofield's views are, and Simon Parkin and Andy Crane. Are they going to come in and be interim prime ministers? Who knows? There are other podcasts you can get that can do politics. Here's a story from Sierra Leone you may or may not have seen. The Sierra Leone Football Association is investigating the outcome of two matches that produced a total of 187 goals. The two second-tier games saw Kenema-based Kahunla Rangers and Gulf FC of Kono heavily defeat their city rivals in Premier League qualifiers on Sunday. Kahunla walloped Lumbabu United 95-0. And Gulf FC thrashed Kokima Lebanon 91-1. The one is so good in that, isn't it? Providing the two biggest victories recorded in the history of Sierra Leone's football. The best part of this is the halftime scores were 2-0 and 7-1.
No. No.
2-0. Next goal's crucial, lads. In it, come on.
Kahunla Rangers scored 93 goals in 45 minutes, which is two a minute if you add in injury time as well.
What happened?
And generally, a referee, if it's 95-0, he's not going to play the added time, is he?
Plus seven. Where'd you get that from, ref? Basically, they were on the same number of points going into the final round of matches. They were fighting for the remaining place in the National Super 10 League, which serves as the final qualifying phase for the Premier League, for those of you who aren't exactly sure how the pyramid works in Sierra Leone. The two games took place simultaneously. The referee of golf matches refused to officiate the second half. And it's strange because it was only the score wasn't
7-1.
7-1. He was subsequently replaced, we don't know, by a referee or not.
Player for the other team, apparently.
Possibly. And then it says, things took a dramatic turn over the course of the second halves when it became clear that the team with the better goal difference would go through, with Kahunla netting 93 and golf scoring 84. I mean, like, they're not on pitches next to each other, are they? So clearly they're just getting texts and going, you've got to keep going. They've scored another. But who's the Jeff Stelling of Sierra Leone? And how's he going to cope with that one? You've got Chris Kamara at one, haven't you? And Alan McAnally at the other guy. There's been another goal, Jeff. Blimey.
Kamara's still on 7-1 and it's 99.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I missed that one.
I've run out of fingers, Jeff.
Let me just point you in the direction of a story that Philippe Auclair has done with his mates at Josimar, a closer look at Manchester City's new Asian betting partner, 8xBet. Philippe says we found some concerning answers, many more questions to be asked. He is on next week. Laura says, please could Barry wish me a happy birthday for Friday? I've treated myself to a ticket for the live stream on Saturday, although I'm in Cheltenham for the weekend, so I'll watch it when I'm back. I love all of your work, but especially Barry.
Laura, I'd happily wish Laura a very happy birthday. And I hope she has a very nice weekend in Cheltenham, which is a nice part of the world. And I hope she enjoys the live stream on Saturday.
Let's finish with an email from Jamie. I hope you're doing all right, Jamie. He says, dear Max and Barry, I hope this email finds you very well. I've listened to you in the pod religiously for almost a decade. While many before me have said this, it really is true that you got me through lockdown and that, as Barry alluded to in his recent article, I strangely see you as close friends despite not actually knowing you. 10 weeks ago, I was airlifted from a mountain after a horrendous fall while hiking on holiday in Wales. Simply put, I'm lucky to be alive. I've broken my back in 3 places. I've severely damaged my spine. Currently, I can't stand or walk, but I am improving and such functionality may return. These past few months have been difficult. However, this isn't the part where I reveal that the pod has got me through it. Rather, I've not been able to listen. You see, I listen to the pod on my evening runs. It's one of my favourite weekly pastimes. Not being able to run has, rightly or wrongly, mean not being able to listen to you either. Trying to be normal in a traumatic situation has just been too tough. Last weekend, however, felt like a turning point. I'm at a point in my recovery where I'm improving. I've been able to reach back out to the world. This meant I finally plucked up the courage and listened to a pod. Despite the upbeat nature and usual fun, I found myself in floods of tears. I'd missed you. My wife and I also listen to the pod in the car sometimes. We cried together at some of the emotional fellow listeners' emails pouring in. We broke our hearts when Barry lost his dad. I guess what I'm saying is I'm now ready to catch up on those dozens of pods I've missed. In fact, I can't wait. I'm so thrilled to get lost in hours of hot takes, FIFA loathing rambles, and Baz ripping into my beloved Newcastle United. So mind you, for what it's worth, not even 11 Sven Botmans could make me forgive what my football club has become. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for helping me to heal. Your friend, that's Jamie, in Newcastle. Listen, Jamie, we send you all our best wishes. If you Google Jamie, one of his friends, I think, has set up a GoFundMe or Just Giving, to help pay for, you know, rehab and recovery and all those sort of things. So you can find that. Jamie Hardesty, H-A-R-D-E-S-T-Y. But Barry, you know, I often come to you when I've read something emotional to say, will you just echo my thoughts? So that is what your job is to do right now?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the stuff of nightmares. And I just wish Jamie every bit of luck in his recovery.
Yeah, we send you all our best, Jamie. And thanks so much for your email. We do appreciate it. We get lots of them. We don't have time to read them all out, or we start to feel very self-indulgent when we do, although we read enough out to feel self-indulgent enough. So I don't know what I'm trying to say there. It's a humble brag, isn't it? Anyway, that'll do for today's pod. Make sure you listen to The Guardian Women's Football Weekly as well to see if our hot takes were better than theirs so we can crush that pod before it has even begun. They'll be back on Sunday. We'll be back on Tuesday. But for the time being, Salon, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. And Boris Johnson has gone.
Ah. That is it's magical. Who's coming in, Salon, or should we just stay on a high for like 10 seconds?
Let's just enjoy it. Soak in the moment.
Give it Dominic Raab to the end of the season. Oh, fuck. Oh, no. Robin, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barry.
Cheers.
We'll be back on Tuesday. Football Weekly was produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.